Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Rose to Pitch. As you can see, we got many people here, and this is Rose to Pitch Live. And clap our audience. Who we have such a pleasure right now to be joined by one of the best things that I've seen thus far in our music realm, and being joined by the New Black Vanguard. Please clap it up for the New Black Vanguard. This came out of nowhere when y'all made y'all's announcement. I was like, okay, we gotta get you on some way, somehow. So we are live from Chicago and Midwest, and we're filming this in December. So first things first, I want each one of you to introduce yourself. So let's start on that end, and then we'll work around.
Cool.
So go ahead.
My name is Adrian Sims. I am a composer with, I self-publish and I also work with Alfred Music, so I do both of those things. And currently studying at UT Austin, studying composition there with Omar Thomas, and I went to University of Maryland as well for my undergrad, and playing trombone for a while too. So, and I'm really, really looking forward to being part of this kind of collective we put together here. I think there's a lot of really cool opportunities here, and looking forward to hearing from everybody.
Yeah. Woo! Yes. Yes. Yes.
My name is Taj Copley. I am a doctoral student at Michigan State University, studying with Dr. David Biedenbender. I am a composer. I did my time at UT Austin for a master's study with Omar. It was wonderful. I'm just really excited to be here, to be with everyone here, and just to explore what's the next thing for everybody here involved. So,
yeah. Yes, sir.
Hey, everyone. My name is Dr. Kevin. Ooh.
He said
UC San Diego, and I went to TCU, to the University of Georgia, and to the University of Miami, and I'm really thrilled with this amazing group of people that we have put together. So,
yeah. Okay, hey y'all. My name is Marie Douglas, composer from Atlanta, went to Florida A&M, you know, the March 100, we the band of the year, so don't be mad at me. Don't be upset. You know, but yeah, like, I'm just so blessed to be around and be amongst so many great, amazing folks, you know what I'm saying? Y'all inspired me like crazy, so I'm excited for this.
My name is Gerard Hall. As of Saturday, how long has it been? The 14th of December. I'm a master of music from Texas State University. And I compose, I teach, I play, I do all the things. However, music is involved anywhere, I'm there. And I've been blessed to have a bunch of opportunities to be everywhere. So looking forward to being part of the collective and see what we do together. Mm-hmm.
And then I'm Ben Horn. I'm currently a doctoral student at Michigan State University, where I'm studying conducting, wind conducting, as well as composition. The composition part is a master's degree, but who really cares? I did another master's degree at Indiana University prior to this, and then I did my undergrad at Columbus State University in Columbus, Georgia.
Go Cougs.
We love that. Mm-hmm. And just really thrilled about this group and all the things that we got coming, because I just look around the base and it's like, wow, we got some people here in the room.
Well, before we go on, we are missing two members. Can one of you or many of you talk to your other two colleagues of the New Black Vanguard and things like that? Can you just give a little rundown? Whoever wants to
go. She is our sister. You know, Dayla's busy right now. She's like doing her thing out there. But you know, I heard a piece of hers last week and just was so enthralled and inspired by it, and you know, just want to shout her out in general. But Dayla Spencer's another member of our group, and you know, we're just so blessed to have her, one of the younger members. So we're, you know, also being inspired by her, you know, youthfulness and just some of the things that she thinks of. You know, I'm just, you know, really inspired by her. So, Dayla Spencer, look her up if you ain't heard of her yet. Definitely look her up.
Kalijah.
Yeah, Kalijah, we're so thrilled to have him as part of this too. Amazing composer and has really beginning to really begin to come onto the scene, and I've heard a few pieces of his already, and I'm just super thrilled of what he has planned. So yeah, we're thrilled to have him as well.
Shout out Kalijah. Yeah.
So a composer's collective. This is not something that we haven't seen historically within the music, you know, music history. We had Lay Six, I think, was one of the first that I learned about. So can we like talk a little bit about what the impact of a composer's collective is, and what you're really, what was the origin of this? Who really thought about this idea, and what did you want to do with it?
So I want to say, was it like 2 years or 3 years ago?
Two years ago.
I was like, oddly enough, here at Midwest, and I went up to Kev and I was like, hey, how come there's no collective for black composers out there? I've seen so many other collectives and was inspired by like just the unity that these collectives had. I was like, there are some voices out there that need to be heard or just come together to create something special. And so 2 years ago, I asked that question and he was like, oh. I was like, well, let's get started then. So it was like a 2 year like mapping and scoping of like who can we ask and who all is available and who are like the new voices and who are voices that have made impacts that we can get together and focus on like a specific goal of just celebrating black music. So.
Yeah, and to add on to that, I mean, I was really inspired by our orchestral colleagues, because there is a black composer collective on the orchestral side that features Jesse Montgomery, Sean Acapello, Carlos Simon, and quite a few others as well. So like, I saw they put together their collective, and in my head, I'm like, why don't we have that in the band world? And so, that was also kind of my inspiration from them. Valerie Coleman as well, part of that too. Yeah. And so yeah, we got to talking, and you know, this is how this kind of all happened. So. Yeah.
And so, where did you all have a familiarity with each other throughout those 2 years, or was it like, oh my gosh, you have, I've never heard of, let me talk to you now? What was that process like?
Well, I heard about Gerard. I was at TMEA and I heard an arrangement of his, and I was like, what's going on? And then, you know, of course, Kataj and Kevin, y'all end up sharing my Big City Lights back when it came out, when I first had posted it, and y'all was like, what the heck is it? So I read, you know, like, so I knew who y'all were, and Adrian, I was happy to learn about, you know, via the things that are going on at UT. There's so much stuff that's happening that's allowing for composers to be visible out of University of Texas Austin. So, you know, it's pretty cool. And, you know, just everybody that's, you know, in the, you know, scenario, bands, you know, just freaking amazing transcription of, what's that? It's just getting deeper.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. You know, that's the kind of stuff that, I mean, I had, what's it called? I don't even know the name of my music, so I'm mad. Listen to the Lambs, you know, I had to listen to the Lambs, but like to hear somebody else taking a spiritual and like doing something with, like all these people just inspired me so deeply. So it was a no-brainer when the question came up a couple of years ago talking to Kataj, and it was no-brainer.
And I have to say too, I'm gonna tell the story and he's gonna be so embarrassed, he's gonna turn red in the cheeks, but I remember being in Kevin Day's Disney audition. I was in the band in 2014, and for a while, the band leader, Ron McCurdy, let the alumni come in and sit on the panel and everything. And we heard a bunch of tuba players that day, everybody played great, man, Kevin came in, man, and he first of all took out this tuba and just.
Just like a music.
The panel looked at each other like. And then he sat down at the piano and just laid it out, man. And we were looking at each other like, okay, so which spot does he get? And it was just so, we saw his life, I mean, his musicality, his livelihood, like his vivacity. It was so enrapturing. And I find that whenever I listen to his music, man, you find a way to write that so well into what you do. So I knew Kevin from them. And then the Millennium Composers Initiative, which a couple of us were a part of for a little bit. And then, of course, I know Adrian from a similar publisher and composer stuff like that with Alfred and Make Music. So this has been an excellent way to connect because I feel like each of us has like a corner of the map, you know what I'm saying? And for us to like be in the same room, kind of round table style, is just mind blowing. I still am beside myself. I have no idea what's going on. Like, I'm still, but I'm excited for the stuff to come, for sure.
No, I mean, I was looking at y'all's like mission online, and I think number two of it was to support Vanguard members and fellow Black musicians through acknowledgement of their deeds and success. And so, like, how has the collective already, you know, supported each other through your own individual projects? And what are things maybe that you're working together on that maybe if you didn't have a collective would have been harder to kind of maneuver?
I just wanted to say that I think that this is very, very special, very important, because this is the first time in the band world I have seen a space where powerful Black voices are creating space for other Black voices in a space like this. We have hardly gotten started. I mean, there have been a lot of discussions. We've had meetings, but like the energy in the room is high. The ceiling of potential is really, really high. Every single person in this room has already had a huge impact on the world. And we haven't done that together yet, but we're already talking about it, and we're about to. And I'm grateful to you all for putting this together and bringing me in, and
for sure.
Looking forward to seeing what we can do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think furthermore, just speaking to, I guess, some of the things that are in the works of happening, I know one thing that I can announce that Kataj is okay with it is that him and I are collaborating on a project right now.
Ooh. Okay.
For a Chamber Winds work.
Oh.
He's working on it. He's almost done. This work will be scheduled to premiere at the end of February.
Mm-hmm.
And if I may, the title of this piece, and maybe soon, maybe we might have a consortium started to get some other groups involved, but the title of this piece is Shea Buttersweet. I can already tell you, having heard the MIDI, obviously we'll start rehearsing in the spring semester, but having heard the MIDI and some of the things that are coming, this is going to be fantastic work. Just like, that's, to me, it's just an example of like some of the things that are like coming ahead for this group, just collaborations here. Then I think also even internally some commiserations over the death of Finale and some other things. You know,
the alcohol is a brand.
I wasn't gonna say anything, but
hey, sometimes a group like this, we're just giving emotional support for one another.
I remember seeing the original countdown, and first of all, I was like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
I just keep seeing these damn numbers and these beautiful pictures, and I'm scared and excited at the same time. And when it finally got announced, I said, oh shit, I like this.
Yeah.
And that's why I literally sent a message. I said, I called the first group consortium, put it on the table, because I ain't let nobody else have it. I just cannot wait, though, to see what's going to happen going forward. Like, just like with just these voices in here, and what you're going to do for the next generation, and what you're going to do for the people who are like, wait, can I write music? Because all we see is like Pierre LaPlante,
We see Ray Vaughan Williams, we see Gustav Holst. Mm-hmm. We don't see enough Ben Horns. We don't see enough Kataj Copeley's or Kevin Days or Marie or Adrian or any of these. And it's like, what you're doing for the next generation is so impactful. Mm-hmm. Just let them know that you can do whatever you want to as long as you have a support system, which y'all are creating, and have the people around you to be like, no, you go do that shit. Mm-hmm. Like, that's for you. You go do that.
Mm-hmm. So I want to bring this back. There's a collective here. Mm-hmm. What do you think the difference is between accomplishing something as a collective versus if you were in your own individual rights, mm-hmm. completely separate on basically different islands? What do you think would be the best kind of contribution being in this collective?
I can speak to that right now. I mean, like Adrian said, we've hardly gotten started, but the biggest thing is visibility.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Being in a space where we not only make space for each other, but other black voices, immediately the energy in the room has been high, visibility has been high, the creative juices are flowing, and it's like another dimension of our creativity that's been unlocked, because collaboration and composing, they go hand in hand, but how often do other collaborators collaborate with other collaborators? And right now, we're kind of starting that process. So just even in the beginning stages, this is groundbreaking stuff. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else want to speak on that?
Question for, because as someone who cannot write a melody to save their life. So like, this space that y'all have created, is this something you can like use to help each other? Like, hey, you know, I'm hitting a block. Like, I'm finished with A, the section, but I'm going to the B section, and I have nothing but this tuba line. Like, is that something y'all can, like, use each other? Like, hey, can you just check this out real quick and just let me know what you hear in that? And can you talk a little bit about that process that y'all have been helping each other out with?
Yeah,
I'll
talk about that too. Yeah. Yeah, like, earlier this year, you know, folks, like, I think Dayla sent us something in the group of hers, that she had composed recently. I think I posted something, Ben posted something. Like, we just sit up in that group and just be there for each other on Facebook. Like, on a regular basis, just be there for each other, you know, whether or not it's, you know, composition related or not, or if it's always composition related, but, you know, because of our unique dispositions in society and just within this this realm of music education, et cetera. You know, we tend to just be there for each other without even really realizing it. Just posting our music into the group for each other to listen to and say, hey, take that out. Or, you know, this is really good. I don't care what nobody says. And, you know, also when crazy stuff goes down, like somebody mistakes, you know, Kevin for Kataj, or, you know, you know, that type of thing.
Gorgeous completely misses Kataj's name altogether.
I was witness to that one time at a concert, and I said, baby, you ain't got no friends.
It's embarrassing.
I said, you have no friends that corrected you. They just let you.
Oh, God.
But, like, that kind of stuff happens, and sometimes we'll need to, like, depend on each other to, like, hey, am I crazy, or is this, like, exceptionally racist or exceptionally microaggressive, you know? So we'll just be there for each other.
And also, like, talking about, like, people, like, taking advantage of someone for their music, and we have had experience with that, especially when we're with Adrian and Dayla, like, hey, this is an issue that had happened to us. We hope that it doesn't happen to you.
Exactly.
So just watching out for each other to make sure, like, the next generation knows that that's not okay.
Yeah.
And continue that and just pave it forward on and on.
So Adrian and Dayla are the two youngest members. What have you learned so far from the more older siblings of the group? What has been some imparting knowledge?
I think most folks in the room self-publish. And I've had experiences with both sides of it, and I think there's value to both sides of it, but I think I've had some closer conversations with Kataj about this, and he's like, you know, man, there's really some benefit to owning your own stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think there is. And that's not a knock on publishing, but like, I'm really seeing the value in that now, and I'm exploring that. And some of us are recording some stuff later this summer as well. Okay. And yeah, with Jack. And I think some things over there are that I can do is I have full creative control over everything that happens. Mm-hmm. I have full creative control of what happens after. I have control over the cover. I have control over, if I don't like a certain take, I can swap it out for something else that I wanted differently. I control the marketing. I control the experience that happens even after I get I'm done with the music from the composition standpoint, and also the fact that when I was in 9th and 10th grade and I was writing music, like, it was a solitary activity. There was no communication. I did not know that any, except for, like, you know, these great names that you saw, I did not know that anybody else composed at all. And I certainly didn't ever think I would have a friend that composed, you know. Mm-hmm. Then I got to college and I realized there were other folks. And then I was like, oh wow, there's other people like me that composed as well. And composed really, really well. So I think that it's just like there's this family atmosphere that's starting to come together here. And I think this sets an example for the next generation. There is no example of this in our community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In this particular space.
Yeah.
That is in such a you know, we're not afraid to have real, honest conversations with each other, you know, and even respectfully disagree sometimes. Like, you know, we're not afraid to do that and come to agreement. Like, you know, Dayla sent something in the chat about a new piece, and I was like, you know, that would be I never thought of that. And I was like, you know, this is a group of folks that I can send something, and maybe if something doesn't work, they're not going to go tell the whole world that, hey, he wrote something that didn't work. They're going to be like, hey, no. Sometimes, but you know, it feels like a safe group to be able to share something vulnerable, yeah. And that that if there's something that's not working, we can work through it and chat about it and move forward from that. So yeah,
like, just to add on to that, I mean, it's a space, and what I hope we are creating with this is a space where we can all just be ourselves, right? We can take down the bags, or we can put down our fronts, and we can just be us. We can talk the way we talk, write the way that we write, and we have the freedom to do so. And I think that is really the heart of the collective, at least for me, is that we have the space to, you know, not have to put a mask on.
Because I'm gonna lift up my brother Adrian real quick. He zoomed past this, just so you know. But when he says full creative control, I'm talking like there is a piece of music I will never not program escape in my life ever. I'm saying it is so good, and it's such a niche part of the publishing scene that I'm pretty sure, like, big corporate building, like, machine type publishers would be afraid of or leery about. But it's a great piece of music, and I'm imagining it probably sells hotcakes because people are so excited. Everywhere I go and I play that piece, people are just in it. And that was something that he was able to do because of the conversations he had with Kataj, because of the relationship that we have in the collective about just being open with each other and collaborating. Truly, that is one of the benefits, is that we lift each other up sometimes in ways we don't even know about. And so that just is one of the examples right there.
I love that. Now, for people out there listening to your music, buying your music, what are some people that inspire you, both in the band world and not in the band world, mainly not in the band world, that inspire, like, the way you write, the way you hear music, and, like, what goes on in your head? Who wants to start?
I think y'all all got them.
Even my
multiverse is right.
Go ahead,
Kevin.
Oh.
I'm still thinking about
that. Yeah. For sure, like Quincy Jones, you know what I'm saying? Something like that, you know, like the rest in peace. I feel blessed to have a new ancestor, but, like, you know, Quincy Jones has been, like, a huge inspiration for my childhood. I wouldn't know. And, you know, somebody that got me through all the crap, you know, all the things that you would go through as a kid. You know, dealing with your parents and whatever else, you know, somewhere like Quincy Jones or somebody else would be too, you know. But then on the same token, I'm also looking at, you know, like Lil Scrappy, or, you know, like, you know, like anybody in my future, or anybody that's from, you know, people from my neighborhood, maybe like, well, you know, Wife and Lucci and all these people, you know, I went to school with, you know, we were all in some you know, hard stuff together and that kind of stuff, you know, just seeing them make their way inside of a regular music scenario, not even the concert scenario, has inspired me to kind of be more of myself and kind of actually try to put on another perspective. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you don't see that many folks from my neighborhood or from the kind of neighborhood I'm from that make it in this realm, you know what I'm saying? And being Black is not a monolith. Mm. And so I'll be trying to just definitely represent for all the different, you know, and point out, you know, and make light of all that. But, you know, I'm definitely inspired by that. I'm inspired by, like, Young Thug. I'm inspired by people's marketing schemes, too. Like, people that do stuff differently than, you know, what is done in the band realm. So, like, since I got into it, I've been, like, trying to figure out, you know, how am I gonna do this? How am I gonna make it an incentive to make folks play this music and, you know, et cetera. So it's just been a lot of different folks that I've looked at for not just musical inspiration, but definitely marketing as well.
My mama.
Because,
Liz, I mean, when I say I was a hard-headed child, when I say I was a hard-headed child and my mom's will was stronger. And at the same time, she showed me all kinds of stuff that I don't even think about now because I think it's so intrinsic, but I would be wrong to not give Luther Vandross his props because his albums were playing all the time. And like, I'm probably not even conscious. I'm sure there's Luther all up in my compositions. not only that, Whitney, yes. And so not only that, I mean, I was blessed to have a very good upbringing with music. I mean, I got into the band scene when I was in sixth grade. I got to start playing an instrument at my public school, which at the time was not revolutionary, but it was kind of like, it was a huge privilege. Not every school had the equipment to do that kind of thing, so I was lucky to be in the right spot at the right time. But my band director, Paul Schmidt, he first basically started me out, man, and he was my best friend's dad. And so the joke was, we'd all get to middle school and join choir instead. but we ended up joining band, and I mean, he's been, Mr. Schmidt has been a guiding force in my life for, man, two decades now, and I mean, even still, and of course, I'd be remiss to not mention the folks that have helped me get, like, just the level of exposure, like the folks at, well, Brian Bell Majors for one. I mean, we talk about, like, publishing being like it's not bad, it's not good, you know, there's pros and cons. One of the pros is that Brian has been instrumental. I mean, yes, pun, he's been instrumental in like kind of my composing upbringing, and he's somebody that you can have a conversation with and be open and real about, and he'll be real back and he'll be a champion to you. And the same for Randall Standridge, and of course my wife Rachel, who I always bounce ideas off of. She's right there. She's happy. Well, no, go ahead and clap for her. She's Rachel has been like she's been the unofficial like assistant composer in the household. I'd be like, I'm stuck. I don't know. Why does this sound wrong? I ran out of stuff to say, and we'll sit down and watch a Studio Ghibli movie, and then all of a sudden. But I think most of us would say that we're the amalgam of the people that we know and love and have come into contact with throughout our lives, and I mean that's a prime example of that. I mean, just one of the things that makes this collective so special is that we now have an even greater catalog to kind of work with and be collaborators with each other.
There's that sound.
I mean, honestly, I think when it comes to my inspirations, first of all, I'm inspired by y'all. Mm-hmm. Honestly. And I think even like just looking at band music in general, if you look at obviously Deep River, I think for me, obviously that music has a certain inspiration that comes from church music. But I think like even basing it in just Omar Thomas kind of opening the door to allowing us or making it feel like it's okay to write music like that. So I attribute that influence to him. I think a lot of my influence also comes from other different areas too, film music. The most recent piece I did, like, there's a little bit of Black Panther influences in there.
I hear it, yes.
So it's the influences can come from anywhere, but also just like even from y'all. Like I would even say even the most recent piece, Katana, there's a little bit of you in there. And it's only because, and the part of that comes from too is because I was working on your piece. I was working on Halcyon Hearts, and I was working on Living Color last year. So like there's a little bit of that, and like so to me a lot of times like the influences when I write ends up being like kind of what I'm working on whatever at that time, especially as a conductor. So I can even think about how like especially in the most recent pieces, because I worked on your music a lot last year, but there's a little bit of that influence in there, there's a little bit of others. And just even thinking about even some of my most recent pieces, my background being a euphonium player, one of my other recent pieces is like pantomime,
you're
going to
play. Yeah. So, why do you want so many notes? So many. Peep the premiere, January, GMEA. So many notes in that final variation. I swear I need a fourth one.
So, Michael's referring to he's premiering a new piece of mine at GMEA.
Yes.
That's for trumpet and for young band.
Yep.
The piece is like, so pantomime is a euphonium piece, but also like almost like caramel dance in a way.
It's
cute. It's kind of a theme of variation, but really cute. It's got some little things, it's fun for the band. But as Michael has also referred to, the last variation.
He got me counting 10-8, y'all. I can't do it. Maybe I can only count 4. It is 10-8. No, he put it at 5. Oh. And tell me why I'm over here standing in front of his band. I'm like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3.
You know what's my favorite part too about that? Is that when I decided that I was going to write a piece of 5, I asked the band director if it was okay. I never asked you.
You should see, there's a video of me playing Planets with the Western Michigan Wind Symphony. Babe, I'm back there.
Stop it.
You gonna hear every beat right here.
Stop away the mistakes.
Amen.
Stop away the mistakes.
That's it. Who wants to go on this shot?
You already have a mic in it.
Yeah, you already have a
mic.
We're talking about inspiration and influence. For me, there will always be some form, some aspect of hip-hop and R&B, and that comes from my time working with Omar at UT, and just feeling like I can be free, and like go back to other influences that shaped me when I was a kid. So finding like having the opportunity to take to get inspiration from the likes of Stevie Wonder, the likes of Marvin Gaye. And then going into storytelling aspects of music I'm listening to right now, like Kendrick Lamar, and going into marketing ideas such as Tyler the Creator, and like connecting with not only my older fan base, but also with my like youthful fan base, and like creating a positive platform for not only people in our profession to like speak their mind and find their own identity, but also letting them find their own identity. And another kind of like inspiration, or I guess what makes me, is I always feel like I am nothing if not the reflection of people who have taken a chance on me. So with everyone here, like me going up, be like, hey, you want to try something completely new? We're just take a chance with me, and y'all did it. And so I'm always thankful, I'm always grateful for that. So, yeah.
I'll say something. I just want to say, man, every time I listen to one of your tunes, I feel something. You know, it's just like, here it is again, you know. Every time I listen to one of your pieces, I wish I could do that. Man, it's really, really, really good. So that was on my mind.
I think for me, my inspirations. That's kind of coming to mind right now. I think the first person is Valerie Coleman. I think she's been she's been a mentor to me, not just in the wind band world, but just, you know, as a composer in general, and like navigating, you know, some tough like situations, and just being a mentor, you know, to help me and to kind of introduce me to this world as a composer. The second person would be John Coltrane. I grew up as a student of jazz, and I love Supreme, changed my life many years ago. And so John Coltrane, I always seem to draw inspiration from as an improviser as well. And I think the last two people would be my parents, because I think I would not have gotten to music if it weren't for them. And you know, my mom, who was a gospel singer, and my dad was a hip hop producer. I think them showing me that love of what they do is what made me want to get into what I do now.
So, I want to go into something that you kind of mentioned a little bit, Kevin, and I want to pose this question to everybody. You mentioned something about being authentic as who you are. Have you, all of you, ever felt pressured by, say, the company, okay, as you were mentioning, self-publishing, about doing what you want, changing whatever you want? Have you ever felt, as a composer, I need to write this way because this is what is the kind of main idea, or what's selling right now, but it might not have been so authentic to you? Have you ever felt that pressure in your time composing?
I certainly have, but I think what I realize is that my unique voice has different characteristics, and as Dr. Marie,
Degree confirmed.
I'm just saying, like, as Marie said, I mean, we're not a monolith. We have a bunch of different experience. We come from all over the place, and I feel like anytime you agree to be in a partnership with somebody, there's always some sort of compromise, because if you're working together, it's a vision that you create, and it can't be one-sided. And if you're working with a company, the company has like their version of doing things, and they partner with you and they try to publish your music. And sometimes that does, because of the give and take, you know, sometimes it does kind of tug at the, you know, creative freedom a little bit. I have certainly felt the pressure. However, I do want to be super clear with, I've been lucky that the publishers I work with have been great about letting me loose. I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't mention how, like, I finally let myself relax, and then You Better Slate popped out, and people are all up on that. And I feel like that's a result of me finally allowing myself to be okay with myself. I think that was more of an internal kind of battle that I was fighting because of my perception of what could be. But I think the reality is much clearer when you are yourself and when you present who you are to the world. I think people are more receptive to that than we might give them credit for.
Yeah, I think for me that has been, you know, that's been a pressure that's been on my mind for a long time. And I think it's more of, you know, people maybe wanting the music that I used to write, but maybe not be interested in how I write now. Because I think the last 3 years, I'm writing very differently than I, you know, have. So a lot of pieces that are being played now, I feel like, was the old me when I was doing things very different. And now that life has changed, and now that, you know, the way I compose, the way I improvise, the way I attack, you know, what I'm writing has changed. You know, for me, it's sort of being comfortable with the fact that, no, I can bring this new person into where I am now. Like, I don't have to be the person I was or try to just keep imitating that person. But I'm trying to give myself the freedom to, you know, to write the way that I do now, and to play that way too.
I just kind of wanted to piggyback onto that. I've had experiences too before but before I get into that, I just want to kind of first kind of talk about how, like, first of all, we're all dynamic beings. And I think with that, it kind of gets to my anecdotal story of having had the experience of having had music that I wrote and then being commissioned to write something new, and then I wrote something different because my inspirations come from a multitude of different things. And then they were like, wait, this isn't that piece. I don't want this piece.
Yeah.
And I've had that happen before, and unfortunately wasn't able to finish that project because of that, because they were expecting something else that I wasn't going to deliver, because that just wasn't what I wanted to do at that point in time. But I think going with that, my point is that we're all dynamic beings and that we all have all these different things, and that sometimes that pressure, I think as far as like being our own people or letting our personalities come out in the music that we write, that I think there's also a danger on multiple ends for us, where like there's a danger of what people perceive our taste and our sound to be, and not just this whole idea of just like there's more than one type of black person that we're all. Let me not stand on ceremony here. We don't only listen to hip hop music. We don't only go to church. We don't only do those things.
Yeah.
You know, we also have those other inspirations. And I mean, your new stuff is great, like Sidney Bezgian. Oh my God.
Woo, it's hard.
I gotta say
something. I'm sorry. I love this man to my right. I love Kevin. I love him so much. But every time I hear one of his damn pieces, I'm like, damn, that shit is hard. And how I know it's hard? It has made its way on military auditions now.
Yeah.
And people are like, no, like for real, his concerto, what I'm talking about, has made it to military auditions. And people are like, yeah, you know that little run that goes up to that high note? I'm not taking this Navy band audition because of that. I say, girl, hey, I'm going to have a little speaker next to me. And I'll be like, good.
You changed people's career paths.
It's not meant for me.
Y'all know I can't read down eighth.
Oh my gosh.
But getting back to my point. While you went over that, is that piece, yeah, sounds so different than your older stuff.
Correct.
But that doesn't mean that it's not an incredible work.
Right.
You know, and I would be worried if, like, I'm sure there's probably gonna be someone out there that's like, ooh, that new Kevin Day piece. It don't sound like a Kevin Day piece. It sound like some mid 20th century something.
Right.
Which there's a bit of that too. But like, that's because your influence is like dynamic, right? And I think that goes for all of us. So just those horizons and expectations.
I love seeing y'all's progress. I would just have to say, throughout y'all's careers and things, like, hearing some of y'all first pieces and then hearing the things now just shows how dynamic we are as a people, as a culture, and how many different walks of life we all come from. Like Marie's piece, listening to Soul Sweet, ooh, where you got Liggity mixed with some real southern hip hop of Atlanta.
That's what I'm saying.
Where would that, you know, the brain was on when you were making that.
The brain was on.
It was on. So like, but people outside of us would only think, oh, it's only hip hop. No, you brought something new to that piece. Now it has people like, what? What is that? Can you just speak on that little experience of putting that out and shocking these people? Because one thing about Marie, if you ever go see her talk about this piece and she will say, Liggity, everybody in the audience like, what? Liggity. Especially the highbrow people in our field that only will resonate with a Stravinsky or Brahms or this or that, those people that we've heard of in music history. And you say it and it's like, oh, she know what that is? Like, yes, she does, because she's Dr. Marie.
Doctor.
Yeah, like, so, that's what folks like Liggity, man. Like, okay, so you gotta, the research I was doing, the whole reason I went to Memphis to study was because it wasn't a typical band person. I didn't want to study with somebody who was already inundated in this world and was going to be telling me to do this like that. And, you know, I just can't stand being told what to do. And, you know, that goes for anything. My mom telling me to clean up the room, and I'm like, man, what? There's so much other stuff I could be doing right now, but you want me to clean up? So it's like that spirit, you know what I mean? So, you know, going to Memphis and studying with this guy, Cameron Entz, who is using Turkish instruments inside of his work, it was like, you know, that kind of stuff inspired me. So, and then on top of him doing his thing, he was showing me all these people, you know, folks like Ligeti and, you know, Messiaen and all these folks, you know, that were just, you know, they make the ensemble do whatever they want, you know what I mean? Like, man, that's my goal, man. I want to make the ensemble chirp like a bird. I want to make it growl like, you know, like an animal, like, you know, like a mean animal, you know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to make all sorts of sounds come out of the ensemble and get people comfortable with dealing with that in the wind barrel, because, you know, we're so used to, oh, this has to be blended. Like, sometimes I go back and I listen to, like, bands after I've been listening to orchestras for a while, I've been listening to everything else for a while, and I just be like, dang, this stuff is so blended. Mm-hmm. It's so, you know, meshed, and you just can't hear any characteristic instrument. Ooh. You know, you can't hear no extended technique, you can't hear no nothing, you just, you know.
Dude, that's that wash of sound.
You feel
wash
me?
Of sound, yeah.
And it's like, that's been my goal since, you know, deciding to mess around with something like Big T Lights Onward, is to just make the ensemble do whatever I wanted to do. And so you hear the beginning of, like, Big, So Sweet Number One, and you hear that, you know, that Chopper Screwed session. And you hear, like, just dissonance, man. You know, just straight up, just, you know, things that Ligeti has inside of his Requiem or any of all these, a lot of these pieces just, you know, stacking minor seconds and making them sound interesting, you know what I mean? You know, and I think that in general, though, you know, hip-hop music is real, avant-garde is real. You know, you heard Music Concrete and all these different things. You know, it's like, it's been the experimental music of the 20th century, whether or not somebody will say it or not. And so, you know, there's so many things you can take out of turning electronic processes back into acoustic scenarios, like back into acoustic, you know, sounds. And so that's what I do. You know, I just take these electronic processes, you know, these high-pass filters, you know, you name it, you know, it's all sorts of things you can do inside of a digital audio workstation. And I just take those processes and turn them back into sounds. Like, I interpret them back into sounds. You know? So that's my big goal, and that's what it's been for, you know, Soul Sweet Number One. You know, appreciate that question.
Of course. What are some of y'all other processes? One, it's so funny with all of you, because this one over here can write just so fast, and I'm like, where was all of that, you know? And then over here, she's like, I'm thinking I'm at the you know, booth with all this mixing stuff. I'm like, child, whose brain is moving? Because it's not mine. It's not mine. Okay. Now I can pick up a stick and give you four for it. That's about
that's
it. That's all I can give you.
I'll
so
see you
so just four for it. I got it.
Everything can be
because
a four.
Just like Michael was saying about his word of how hard.
Everything can
look,
be a four.
Look. Kevin's work will make me go on a whole, I would rather run on the freaking treadmill for 20 minutes than try to decipher how to conduct through these numbers I ain't
four,
never seen.
Four.
That's
four,
it. That's
five,
all I got.
Four,
so, it's just your brain. Y'all brain is completely wired differently than anybody else. And I want from anybody that's listening or watching to get inside y'all's brains of y'all's music, because you're gonna have these middle school, high school, collegiate ensembles performing your works. How is the best way they can perform your works to be authentic for them to go on the journey to making it what you designed it to be? What are some of those ways for that?
I mean, this kind of even ties in with what we were talking about earlier. In regards to the music that's being created, the band, and I spoke about this on a panel earlier, the band doesn't exist just for the pure sake of sounding like a great band. The band exists for the sake of bringing out the, why play this piece if it's just going to all be perfectly blended? There are some pieces that works great. I've got pieces that's exactly what it's designed to do. But there's other pieces that it's like, no, like this specific aspect needs to come out. Sure, it doesn't it, sure, like you, a judge might tell you, oh, this is too loud. That's the point. You're supposed to do that. You're supposed to bring out the different aspects of the piece. Maybe you don't get a one.
Maybe you don't get a one.
Maybe you don't get a one.
Maybe
it's not about the one.
Can we make a motion right now for the composers to have their say on some of these LGBTs? Because a judge would definitely
get out of here.
Get out of here. Oh, and that's from a composer mouth, okay? That's for all the judges out there. Okay? So, yes, correct. Yes, thank you, baby. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Real talk.
You just messed up the score.
I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
All right, no time for apologies.
Oh, thanks. I want to post it tomorrow.
I'll see you on Friday. I guess the question again, one more time.
What is the process of the really the best way for ensembles to play your music the way you designed to play it, so they can get an insight of what you were going for in this piece of music?
For all my pieces, I want just for them to find themselves in that music. And I like truly believe that each performance of whatever piece, be Halcyon Hearts, AO, or In Living Color, it doesn't need to be the same. It truly does not. Everybody's got their own color. Mm-hmm. I wrote this piece with the colors that I had envisioned. We won't match in blues, we won't match in reds, but as long as your color is in that music, that's what I care about. Mm-hmm.
So. The journey.
The journey.
Yeah, I mean, for me it comes down to two things. One, do your research, right, about whatever the genre of music is, and two, get the groups, feel the rhythms of what's happening, right? Concerto for Wind Ensemble is the piece where, you know, lots of people are playing it, and I always encourage directors to do your research on this music, right? If you don't know jazz music, if you don't know gospel, if you don't know hip-hop, fusion, whatever, you know, do your research so that way you are prepared in the best way possible to present this piece to the people who may or may not know this music at all, right? And then being able to feel the rhythms, it might be 5/16, but it's not that big. But feel the main grooves. Like you said, everything can be in 4. Everything can be in 4, 3, 5, 7, 8, or 9. But that's my thing, is grooves are important. Tempos within those grooves are important. Right? Tempos, I'm very specific about that, right? If it's too fast, it's not gonna groove. If it's too slow, it's not gonna groove. So you gotta figure that out. So.
I got something on that real quick. For me, there's some pieces that like you have to be within this 2 metronomic range, or it's not gonna work. And then there are other pieces that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
For me, it at least, and I think every composer is different about that. And I think that, I guess I don't know. Does that like? How much freedom does, for me, I think there's pieces that there's a lot of aspects that conductors can have a lot of freedom with. Like there's certain, like especially in lyrical music, I find, particularly with younger levels, we stick to the same tempo throughout in those floor pieces, and I think it's okay to open up and let a certain phrase breathe a little bit. Again, if we don't get the downbeat together the first time, that's okay, we'll do it the next time. Even if we don't do it in the performance, hey, we learned something. We learned that, okay, maybe we need to watch next time.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious how all of us kind of feel about how much control we want over the music versus how much freedom we want to give the conductor. Mm-hmm. And how much freedom they, you know, what's that balance like?
No, I relate to that thought process. Like, I was talking to somebody recently, and they were asking about, you know, how to interpret this, how to interpret that. How much is tempo important? And, you know, these tempos are important, but it really is about, you know, how much, maybe like, you know, this sounds crazy, and I'm not trying to be funny, but like how much fun you're having, like, you know, how much of the aesthetic you're actually capturing, you know? You know, how deep are you digging for the second half of Soul Suites, where we're talking about, you know, wading the water, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, so stuff like that, just like, I've had people tell me, like, professors and such, you know, like, oh, wow, like, you know, as far as waiting water, it's so long or it's so slow. Why? you know, is it a black thing? Yes. Looks in camera, it's black. And it is, like, we be moaning and weeping and wailing, and yes. You know, sometimes we be groaning, and that's what this is right yes. here. So taking those tempos seriously, and at least, like, yeah. it doesn't have to be the number necessarily. It just has to be an aesthetic. It has to be the emotion. You know, it can be a range of mm-hmm. of that vibe, but it has to definitely just fall within those mm-hmm. you know, parameters of gap. You know, garnering that emotion.
Yeah. I actually, I was in a conducting lesson with Dr. Caroline Beatty at Texas State. One of the finest humans I've ever met in my life. Smart as all get out, by the way. We were talking about interpretation, and in our conversation, I think we both kind of came to the realization that, you know, if you interpret a piece of music, it's because you have some sort of foundational knowledge about what's going on. So, I, like Dr. Day is saying, do your research. Do your research. Because if you're about to play come Sunday, go to the service one time, just one time, just one time. Because and I'm saying this as and I haven't been to church myself in a long, long time, but I was brought up non-denominational, and so I mean, so my church looked super different. I mean, we would get up and you know we would stand and. We would say, yeah, everybody have a seat, please be seated. It's a very but when I went with my Aunt Lisa and my Uncle Sanders at one time, see T.D. Jakes, and I was I was this big, very autistic, and I was crying. I'm like, what's going on? Because there was so much, and we've been saying, like, there's so many different experiences that all of us have, and we come from different areas of the planet, and we have different backgrounds. So when you play somebody's music. You got to connect with them first of all, because start with the program notes, obviously. Mm-hmm. And composers out there too, if you're listening to this, do your research. Like, don't just write in a box in a room by yourself. I know it kind of seems like that's the default. Mm-hmm. Like, you write in solace, right, where you're just locked away, but you have to open up your worldview and learn yourself through your process so that you do the topic justice. Whether you're writing about something you know, something you don't know, if you're commissioned to write something that sounds like you, or if you want to step out on a limb and write, you know, some liggity, go and study the scores, because at that point, the only place that the band or the orchestra or the group can start is where you left off at the time. Yeah. If you don't have that foundation yourself, it's hard for them to pick it up. And so as you sew your music onto the page, that has to come with some experience. And if you're conducting the music, you should know about the source material. You know, if you're going to play You Better Slay, please listen to James Brown.
Okay.
And if you're going to play a transcription of an orchestral piece, please have listened to the violins play it, and don't just assume that clarinets will sound the same. You know what I mean? It's, you have to do your research and come with a foundational. And I think that is where interpretation at its core is born. And you interpret in the ways that you do, and that is not supposed to be the same from person to person, but the way that you do it is by digging in and knowing what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to firmly second everything you just said. And then just the thoughts that come to my mind too, is just, the position of the composer, if I'm going to do my research to write whatever style it is that I'm going to write in, I'm expecting you as a conductor, performer, to also do your research.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because then what's the point of me writing in the program, for Deep River, what's the point of me writing in the program that's Henry Burley's name? Paul Rose's name.
Yep.
Because I did that research to make sure that I was respecting them, so I expect you as a conductor to be able to do that. And you wouldn't know how the number of times that I've worked with groups that are like, oh yeah, blah, 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 and I'm like, well, it's there.
Right there.
Or even my favorite parts about Deep River is like, hey, how do you interpret this part? I'm like, well, did you read the text?
Mm-hmm. Read it.
That's
sweet.
Oh. Yeah. I heard that from people.
No, of course, I've been much nicer. I haven't just said, but like, that's what like my inner pocket
did. Let
did you read the text? Did you look up the names that I wrote? Because I did that research on purpose and put it in the program notes on purpose with the expectation, especially also speaking as a conductor, that you would do that research too. That's always like my first step. If I'm a conductor, my first step is I'm going to do the research, but I'm going to look at the things. And it's just, and it's one of those things too, where it's like as I'm doing further research about anything that I do, about any other different cultures or things that I want to do, if I want to write music about it, but there's a lot of stuff that like it's just so easily accessible.
Google, because we're institutional people,
Oxford Music Online.
That's an Oxford Music. I don't set foot in libraries, but
Yes, and I second everything that you said too. I mean, quick comment here. I mean, what their research gives you is context, the context of what is happening. I've heard people say, why are there so many notes in Come Sunday or in Concerto for Wind Ensemble? Because it's about organ players.
Mm-hmm.
Shredding. I used to play Hammond organ and keys and church, all that stuff. So like, I have lots of notes because my head is like, I'm moving, right? So having the context is very key to the success of making it as authentic as possible.
I have something. I know I say you have lots of notes. You know who has never, so I say that because that, but a lot of people in our windband world and in the music world, they will never say Bach had too many notes.
Right.
But the minute y'all be writing, they're like, you know, Omar and them got too many notes. Why? Why don't Bob got too many notes? Yeah. Because he had notes everywhere. In your feet and in both hands. And you say he got too many notes. So I'm just saying, I've never heard, and I love Baroque music. I love it. I've never heard someone be like, you know, and I'm like,
I
have
a statement for that.
Oh. Come on. Diamonds up.
The same reason that they question Barack Obama's brown suit. That is all.
Oh. Now, I have a question for all the composers here. And it seems like around this time a lot, you get asked to maybe come visit the band, come talk to the band. But this is 1 week out of, like, how many weeks we got in a year? 52?
52.
You did. I did not know.
Three.
I almost said 42. I got three buttons. Okay. So I know a lot around this time you're asked, like, hey, can you come talk to the band? Hey, can you stop by a rehearsal and all this other stuff? I know at least 4 of you in person, and I know just met both of you. I don't think if someone shot you a text or an email, hey, could you Skype in real quick and just talk to the kids? That y'all be like, oh, absolutely not. Like, who would say that when, like, when people are like, hey, I don't understand this. I've done my research, and there's still this one part that I need help with. Or, hey, my kids would love to see you. The reaction I saw my kids have when Kataj walked in the door yesterday was absolutely insane. I said, now I feel like a bum. Like, y'all ran toward this man like he is, like, a superstar. And he is, but, like, dang. But, like, I know that most of you would just love to, like, have FaceTime with these people. And I don't know if the band world is so inundated. Ooh, I use a big word. With half the composers they pay me. Girl, that's that full time professor word right there. I didn't wear my shoes today, but I don't know if the band board is so inundated with half the people they play is dead. So they can't reach out. That when they play living composers, that they're like, oh, wait, they have a telephone or Zoom, and they could Zoom into my classroom. Yes. Cool? And you can be in your first line, hey, y'all, we broke. So if you can donate your time, that'd be great. Or, hey, this is as much as we can give you. I don't think y'all would be like, yeah, absolutely not. I hate y'all.
Or even an email recording.
And
because then it'll be higher quality audio anyway.
Oh.
Because Zoom audio be tripping.
I just want to say this to all the educated conductors if you're in front of the ensemble. When they give you advice on how to perform said works, listen to them. The amount of times I have
seen where y'all have said something like, hey, maybe try this, but the conductor on the podium is so rigid of like, this is how my brain can understand this, even though you're saying you're playing my music wrong. You have to listen to the composer. Just that is the first thing. Listen to what these people have to say, because it's their work that we are interpreting on top of that, okay? Just have to put that out there. I don't know if y'all ever had that before where you're like, this conductor is not budging whatsoever. Oh, I see faces. You ain't no names. Look, because they're still customers, so we just go pray on with that one.
Well, please reach out to the composers.
Yes, please reach out to the composers. Now, how we talked about a little bit about what's coming next for New Black Vanguard and how you can open it up for the next generation. Is this only going to be an 8-person collective, or will this be opening up as many people start to come in? And how can up and coming composers start to become part of this collective? Loaded question.
I think we can tag team on this one, but I think the goal is to open it up to more and to be able to, you know, like we're talking about, creating some opportunities to really get out there to collaborate, not just as composers, but with our peers who are conductors as well. So no, I don't think we're always going to be 8, but I think right now we are, and we'll kind of see where time to go. So.
Mm-hmm. 8 is great.
8 is great for now.
Yeah.
And we will be growing. Not only just in the world of composition, but in the world of conducting, in the world of educators. This is just the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Harlem Renaissance.
Period.
Okay.
And see, when Katash hit me up, I was like, hey, you ever heard of Art Ensemble Chicago? You know, stuff like that. Let's do something like that. So, you know, we definitely want to invite, we want to make it a scenario where the best and the brightest are joining us. And, you know, we're edifying each other.
Yeah.
Definitely don't want this to seem like some, you know, standoffish, you know, I've never been that kind of person, just like, I don't want to join anything like that, period. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that everybody's on the same page and making sure that we're edifying one another and just lifting up each other inside of this profession.
Mm-hmm. Y'all are creating a table for your own. That's what's beautiful about this right here. Because between, you know, before 2019, especially after, you know, 2020 and social unrest and everything, we always talked about a table and how for many years, decades, millennia, we have never been invited to a table that we sit at. And what I love seeing you all here is that you said, I don't give not a damn about what a table is over there, because y'all have created your own. And you're creating a legacy behind that. And I just want to give y'all's praise right now. Can we all clap it up? It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing to see with that. Congratulations to all of you. Don't forget us.
You know, when they get famous.
Right. Like, don't forget us.
Well, if anyone wants to contact the New Black Vanguard or any of you as individual composers, where can we do that?
You can write me letters in prison. We have a...
She's saying Kodak, but you know that.
It was a joke, a serious joke. I pray that I never end up there. We have our Instagram, you know, New Black Vanguard Instagram. We got a website. You can hit us up on that. You know, we've set these infrastructures up. We'll definitely send them over to our little pitch so that y'all can put them in the comment or, you know, in the description so that we can. But hit us up, man. We try to really take over the world.
Beautiful.
Well, with that, thank you for allowing us to talk to you today. And for anyone who's watching, we hope that you found something inspiring from the many, many voices that you heard. And I'm excited to see myself what happens with New Black Vanguard as we go along. So thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. All right. I need a drink. That's a time for a drink.